this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Wow, this is a lucky day for me. First of all, I got to talk about Rome, which is a city I love, and now I get to talk about New York City with somebody who really knows New York City. Lucien Bloch has written a fantastic book, personal essays, called Whistling in the Dark. And I am so happy to welcome you to Joy on Paper. Lucien.
Hello, Joy. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, thank you. Well, you know, my name is Patsy with a Z.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I just wanted to...
You're Patsy, right. Yeah. I'm sorry. I was looking at the wrong piece of paper.
No, that's okay. The reason I'm saying it is that I thought you would find it interesting that Jimmy Hoffa gave me my name.
Really?
Really? I used to sit on his knee when I was a little baby, and he used to call me Patsy. And so...
That's quite a recommendation.
Exactly. Because I was thinking about a certain New Yorker who played him in a movie, and that was not Jimmy Hoffa. Jimmy Hoffa was so sweet, and he was Midwestern. He was not from Brooklyn. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, I don't know much about him except that his burial place is a mystery.
Well, maybe not. Maybe not to me, because I was still in contact with him when he was in prison. So, so you never know.
No.
I might come out with a book, but I will not be able to come out with a book as good as your book. I mean, personal essays, Whistling in the Dark. You've given us New York. I didn't know so many things about New York that are in your book. And then, of course, you've also given us Vienna because you write so beautifully about your mother. So let's start a little bit with the New York stories. Because, for example, I didn't know about Lake Manhattan. I knew there was a lake, and I didn't know sort of the history of it. So all these little tidbits that you just make New York come alive.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I've been here all of my conscious life anyway, and it's good material for me. I enjoy New York, and I enjoyed writing about it.
And you know it so well, and write so it's very compelling when you're writing. I can see you're so visual. I can see what you're writing about, and it's really exciting.
Well, thank you. I try to be as accurate as possible, but still imaginative about the metaphorical stuff. So I love writing personal essays. I started out writing novels, fiction, and it just didn't work for me. I mean, they were pretty good books, but I didn't. 40 years later, I needed to rewrite a lot of the stuff. So I found a different form for it, which allowed me to be much more, it was much looser in a way than fiction, because it was just what was rolling around in my head. I didn't have to do it in the form of another character or a plot or anything like that. It's a very forgiving form, the personal essay.
It is, and we get to go into your head. I think it's a beautiful mind you've got.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I don't know. I'm obsessed with language, as comes through in the book, I think. And it's mainly because I didn't... When I first started school, when I was 5 years old, my parents sent me to school. Wasn't until I walked into the classroom that I realized I didn't speak the language of everybody else. We spoke only French at home. I don't know why. My parents, who both spoke perfect English, kept English away from us. And it was a very difficult first year of school, I have to say. Yeah.
So tell us where you started school.
It was a progressive school across the street from where we lived, which I think is why they chose to send me there, because it certainly didn't, it wasn't anything like their own values and ideas about behavior and all of that. But that's where I went. Didn't get a very good education. actually flunked freshman English in college. But things have changed since then. I'm not going to flunk English again.
No, I don't think so. Somewhere along the line, you learn how to write, because I have to tell people that you had a column in the New York Times. You've done such marvelous writing and award-winning writing. Part of it, I think, you like poetry.
I started out writing poetry, like many adolescents, but I didn't really stick with it. About halfway through college, I stopped, although I had some very good role models at Wellesley, professors. Richard Wilbur was one. But it didn't do it for me. It was almost too fragile a form. So I started writing a novel for my children. I thought it would be a record of my upbringing in New York, and it turned out a little differently. And then I wrote a bunch of short stories, and finally, I found the personal essay, that very, very forgiving form.
Well, you know, when we're thinking about New York nowadays, the changes that you've seen over the years, it's
tremendous.
When you look back, I was recently looking back, doing some research about the Automat. And so I was looking at some old, you know, documentaries, old videos. And how nice the people looked. I mean, the streets were crowded. You know, Fifth Avenue was crowded, but all the men are wearing suits and the women wearing hats.
And a lot of the men are wearing hats too.
Oh yes,
Oh, I used to love the Automat. That was a very special treat that my father took us to once in a blue while, and it was amazing. It was just. Imagine the whole choice that we had, which we never had at home, of course. You ate what was on the table. But I missed parts of New York. But, you know, the Upper West Side has retained a lot of its character. It's still a very mixed community and very lively, very bustling streets. And it's an enclave of the old world in New York.
With great restaurants.
With pretty good restaurants, yeah.
I know. As I said, even simple things like Lake Manhattan, which I didn't even know it had a name. Tell us, tell my listeners about it. Why is it there?
It's not a lake. It was originally called Manhattan, Lake Manhattan. It was not a lake. It's a reservoir that was created during the Civil War, and it was used to provide water for New York. And then there had been a reservoir on the site of the public library on 42nd and 5th. But that gave water downtown. But New York moved uptown. It's still kind of moving uptown. And they needed a new reservoir. So they built one during the Civil War and on the site of an old lake. So they called that first reservoir Manhattan. But which is the old name of the island of Manhattan. So it was eventually recognized the way I recognize it as an urban treasure, and a lot of people who visit New York come to visit the reservoir because you get views that are incredible. You know, you see skyscrapers across the water. I actually walk around the reservoir every single morning before I sit down to write.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's fantastic. Growing up in northern Michigan, I used to dream of living either in London or New York. The museums and the cultural life, that it's just at your fingertips there.
Yes, it is. It is. And not, if you take advantage of it, of course. But it is there, and it's not going away.
We hope.
We hope. Well, yeah, eventually electronic everything, right? But at the moment, it's still live.
So you remember when they built the MoMA?
But I didn't see the Museum of Modern Art until it was well established as a new building that was built in the 30s, actually, a little before my museum going time. But I used to stand online when I was a teenager, late in my teenage. I used to go to the movies there to stand online waiting to get into the theater and see who looked interesting.
Like Radio City Music Hall.
That's right. Yeah, but that was expensive. And I used to have my parents' Museum of Modern Art membership card, so it didn't cost me anything.
Oh, that's nice. When I think of New York, I think of all the times that I was there. Of course, we went to the theater a lot. It was so wonderful in those days to go to the theater. You know, Yul Brynner, I remember when we were there and saw the original version. So did you see a lot of theater?
No. I wasn't taken to, yes, when I was older, but not as a young child. I was taken to one movie in my childhood, and that was Bambi, and it scared me to death. I don't know why they call that a children's story. The first thing that happens is the mother is shot.
I know. I thought it was a terrible film. I couldn't stand it myself. But, you know, one thing I do want to talk about a little bit, again, it's always time constraint, but let's talk a little bit about your mother, because you write so beautifully about her.
Well, she was a difficult mother when I was young and through my adolescence, because she was quite strict. But later on, when I started to have children myself, my views changed a little bit. She was a very hard number to follow, I have to tell you. Very glamorous, very social, many things that I am not. But I got very, yes, when she was sick for so long before she died, I did revise my view of her. And she always did stress the Vienna background much more than my father did, his Belgian one. So, it's, you know, you grow up with the parents you get. You don't choose them.
Well, you know, I did like how you wrote about Vienna because of I've been also to Vienna many times, and the Jewish life in Vienna was so vibrant, and I can see how difficult it was to lose that.
Oh, yes, and she's not the only one. Everybody who came from Vienna and had to leave it feel very much the same way about it, that it was a pearl of cities and that nothing else can quite measure up. Not even Paris.
No, I know, exactly. And we have, in my own synagogue, we have people who come from Vienna, and it's the same thing. It is, for them, it is the shining city, much more than Paris, because it was so cultural, and the Jewish community was so very active there, of course, partly thanks to the Rothschilds and all of the other families there. But the whole cultural aspect of it, It was hard for them to come here.
Oh, very, very. Yeah, and I think that's why they, particularly on the west side of New York in the 50s, there were a lot of Jewish refugees because it was a hospitable place for them. And they did stick together, those Viennese ones.
I don't know, perhaps it's the music in their soul that Vienna does to you.
Yeah, I guess that's a good part of it.
It is. Yeah. It really is. There's something when you spend time in Vienna that even today, there's that music. Something gets into you. And, of course, the goulash, too, helps. And the schnitzel.
Not to mention all those wonderful coffee houses
oh,
with
oh.
the newspapers on sticks. hanging there.
I love those. I love those. For anybody who... And they still have it. The last time I was there, they still had those coffee houses. And to have a cold day in Vienna and to be eating goulash, there's nothing better, really.
Yeah.
Well, you know, yeah. I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today, Lucy.
Well, thank you for inviting
me. I think your book is... I had earlier another book, another author, and I was telling him, you know, he wrote a book about Jews in Rome, and your book is a perfect book for all writers to really get a feeling for New York City, because you write so wonderfully, and a great, just a source. I mean, lots of ideas, lots of stories in there. And you've done a wonderful job, and I just want to thank you so much. And it's called Whistling in the Dark, Personal Essays. It's available online.
On Amazon and on Barnes & Noble, both online.
And it's Lucien Bloch, and it's B-L-O-C-H. Really fantastic book, and I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, you're fantastic. Just fantastic.
Okay. Goodbye.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.